Good morning. It's 8:05. You're listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani. And that was Patti Smith, because it's always good to start a day with Patti Smith. And by the way, she has, just to promo her, because I love her, I can't help it, she's got an exhibition up and was on the BBC website of Polaroids that she's taken. Which she's, you know, I'm not a photographer, but it's amazing. Check it out on the web, folks, because we have the web back now. right on
it. Anyway. That one day, it was scary.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a great show today.
We do.
And what's that all about? We got all sorts of things going on.
We have, what could be a three-ring circus, but we don't know how many rings are actually going to be active at this point. We are very excited to bring to you this morning a discussion of solidarity and movement building. As, well, let's face facts, all struggle is the same struggle. And we will have some folks joining us this morning. We know at this moment in our lives, we know that we are joined with Nora Callahan. Good morning, Nora. Well, while we work to have Nora with us, via the phone, we have Nora, who is the executive director of the November Coalition. And the November Coalition is an organization that has worked since the late 90s on drug reform and combating the drug war, also prison reform issues. Nora has just returned from a five-week stint with Occupy DC, and we'd like to hear all about her adventures there, her experiences, and how the drug war and prison reform issues also interconnect with the issues of the 99% and Occupy. So I'm going to try this one more time. Good morning, Nora.
Good morning.
Ah, so nice to hear you. Yes.
Ah, okay.
So, Nora, thank you so much for joining us. I want to let our listeners know we will also probably have a couple of folks from the Portland Occupy and talking about different actions coming up here locally. There's just a slew of actions to get involved with if you, in fact, care about social change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing if you are listening to Positively Revolting, you care about social change.
And this is a talk radio show. This is a call-in radio show. You can give us a call at 503-231-8187. Or if you don't feel like talking and you have questions or comments for our guests or us, give us type away to us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com.
Indeedly. And we will we'll give you updates on the show as it happens, I guess. That's what we'll do. So, good morning, Nora. Let's start off with you. I think if you could just start with a moment letting our listeners know about your work in general, what the November Coalition has been doing, and how you got involved with that. Let's do an overview of that first.
Okay. Well, the November Coalition was founded in 1997, and in a real simplistic way, we're family members of people who got put in jail or prison for nonviolent drug offenses. And that's what our group's comprised of. And so through the years, we've been working to teach our fellow citizens about the harms of the war on drugs, and that we really can find a better way than punitive, harsh policies that put people... It's made us the world's leading jailer. I know your listeners probably know all this stuff.
Well, but, not probably.
I wouldn't count on that. You never know. We have a new listener every day.
You never know. New listeners every day. Okay. So we founded in 1997 to do this education of teaching people about what the government was doing in arresting so many people. And the reason I got involved and was one of the co-founders of the organization was my brother received a 27-and-a-half-year federal sentence back in the late 80s, and he's still in federal prison.
What was he charged with?
Cocaine conspiracy.
A conspiracy?
Conspiracy.
Now, don't you have to have a bunch of people together to do that?
Well, two people can be
two?
A conspiracy. But the police usually, you know, think they have a large group of people. And so, and with drugs, I mean, any drug transaction is a conspiracy.
Mm.
And so that's how we became the world's leading jailer. In the federal system still today, over 50% of prisoners are there for nonviolent drug offenses.
Now, how do you feel about the term war on drugs?
Well, they called it that.
I know. What would you, I know, right. And that's, I mean, to me, it's kind of time to reframe that in a big way. What would you, because I feel that it's sort of like having a war on terror, which is the verb, noun.
The war on intangible objects?
Yes.
Is that what you're going for?
The similarities are uncanny.
Yeah, right.
The war on drugs and the war on terror. In fact, just recently, the New York Times did quite an expose on that, explaining to people that the war on drugs sort of laid the groundwork for the policing of the war on terror, for the same policing tactics. So the problem, well, with the war, now that was started, the terminology was started by our leaders. You know, we've had wars on poverty and war on hunger, but the war on drugs was not a metaphor, because they fight it with militaristic policing, with these terrible punishments. And
yeah, but do you find it as actually a war on drugs? That's
no,
sort of my question.
People.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking.
It's not a war on drugs. It ends up a war on people. But it's a war indeed when you're separated from your loved ones, when mere suspicion can have all of your assets seized by the government. They never have to prove anything either. They can take assets and just say. It's called civil asset forfeiture. So those things, you know, that's sort of disarming the enemy, because then a person doesn't have the means to even get a lawyer. They have to get a public defender. And on it goes. And it did. It took prison expansion in the late 80s to a prison industrial complex by the time the late 90s were.
It's getting to be like a slave labor system, isn't it?
Yes, a lot of the prisoners are in the federal system. They have Unicor factories that are attached to many of the federal prisons. And in the Unicor factories, they make a lot of the things that the military uses: desks, beds, gas mask parts, tank cabling parts. So wherever our military goes in the world, so goes the goods that federal prisoners make.
Well, that's a nice little circle, isn't it?
Yeah, very profitable one.
Yeah.
Because they don't get bacon, prevailing wage. The prisoners make very little money.
So you have been working in this movement, in the movement to raise awareness of the drug war, raise awareness of prisoner issues for, gosh, if my brain could only do quick math, 15 years.
Yeah.
And you, say a couple months ago, got this idea that you were going to grab a ticket and go to D.C. And what was your, and you ended up being with Occupy D.C. for 5 weeks.
The Freedom Plaza gathering, but we worked a lot with McPherson people too. They have two Occupies in D.C.
Right.
Even to this day, there's still two encampments.
So let us know a little about that. What pulled you there? What gave you the idea that this was the thing you needed to do?
Well, I'm an older person. I'm almost 60 now. So I guess when you're young, you know, you think, oh, how fun. You know, I'm going to go do this in camp.
yeah,
and I did go in November. I didn't go in the beginning when it had first started. And I had heard about it in the summertime, that there was going to be a gathering of people in D.C. and they weren't necessarily going to turn around and go right home. So I made my plans to go in mid-November when I figured they needed reinforcements. As people would dwindle when the cold came, I would go, and I stayed 5 weeks. It was a wonderful experience. Now, why did I go?
Why did you go?
Because I saw our issue, and have for a long time, embroiled with larger issues. And other issues and other groups. It seems like we all end up all meaning, you know, we have environmentalists and we have people that want the wars abroad to stop. There's people that want the drug war to stop. There's people that are concerned about the privatization of so many public things like water. And this is on a global scale, of course, that I'm thinking. But we all seem, we meaning people who are struggling, and trying to make the world a better place seem to come up against the same thing, and that is our government is not responsive, because they don't have to be responsive to us, because the only people that government have to be responsible to are the wealthiest of people. And we call that a corporation now.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw myself and my colleagues all facing the same sort of problem, is that our system had broken down even further in 15 years to where we didn't have any. The people don't have power.
And you see this as sort of a way of really direct action of people taking the power back into their own hands?
Yes. The Occupy movement?
Yes.
What happened with that? Yes. And also to say that, you know, we're here and we're not content.
Mm-hmm. And no one's going away soon.
Right. We're not going home. We're going to stay right here, as Dave Rovick's one of the singers that write songs about Occupy.
And you had, David, of course, lives in Portland.
Yes, he's from Portland.
Yes.
Right.
And you had opportunity to work with him in D.C.
Amazing. Amazing man. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. We also have with us this morning Arlo Stone. Good morning, Arlo.
Good morning. Good morning.
And now our engineering pixie is grabbing the microphone button and pressing it into submission. And try that again.
Hey, here we are.
Good morning, Arlo.
Cheers.
It's so good to see you. Arlo has been working in Portland with Occupy in various ways, and we can hear from Arlo in a minute several of the things that he's been doing. But currently, the item on the plate is some direct action that is coming right up, and that is you're working with Occupy the EGT.
Yeah, we...
What is the EGT? Let's start there.
Okay, the EGT is a grain conglomerate. Basically, 90% of the grain in this country is controlled by Asher Midland, I think, ConAgra, and a company called Bunge. And Bunge is a subdivision of Goldman Sachs. And what Bunge has done and EGT has done is to use community funds, community tax subsidies to entice Longview, Washington, in their port to build a giant grain elevator. And once they have the grain elevator complete, what they are now trying to do is usurp the longshoremen and the longstanding unions and go into the Longview community and take this elevator that was used with community resources and subsidies and whatnot, and make it the exclusive domain of a scabbed non-union grain elevator. They're trying to break basically the longshoremen union. And the longshoremen issued a call, and after August, they had a bunch of people get arrested about this grain elevator, felony charges even, and they sent out a call to not just Occupy, but all people in the community that we share that are local or affiliated or around in the general vicinity of Longview, to say, hey, if you abhor unfair labor practices, we really could use your help. And Occupy, recognizing a chance to be in solidarity with working peoples and union peoples, and to take on a subdivision of Goldman Sachs right here in our own backyard, is far and away a worthy cause for our movement. And so we're glad to answer that call that they put out. We encourage anyone with a desire to see unionized labor triumph over the tactics of the 1% to break down our communities and to undercut the protections in place to keep our communities strong and vibrant. Occupy and the Longshoremen both encourage anybody listening to this to make this a part of your life and make this protest, you know, out here on the West Coast, something good. So that's what we're up to.
Thanks. Is anybody ready for calls? Let's have a phone call. It's a call-in show.
And we should maybe even announce that number.
That would be 503-231-8187. You're listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO.
I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani and our guest. I'm sorry, I forgot your name again.
Arlo.
A great name. And I guess Arlo and Nora Callahan on the phone. And we've got Val on the phone with a question. Welcome to the mix, Val.
I'm sorry. Hi. I'm just calling regarding the MDAA. So I think I don't actually have a question.
Okay,
No, that's great.
No, that's fine. You're calling
Val
with more information. So, Val, you also have been working with Occupy. And basically, a lot of actions are upcoming, locally, nationally, all around the world. We are an active people right now, and that's an awesome thing. Val, you are working on raising awareness and creating action around countering the National Defense Authorization Act. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, correct. So locally, we have been doing the anti-NDAA protest march. We've been doing the anti-NDAA march in Portland since the late November, and this would be our sixth march. The only difference with this one is that we're actually collaborating with other occupations in making it a coordinated protest. And the importance of this is that if we have a well-coordinated protest, we can potentially bring it to a national awareness level that we saw with the SOPA and PIPA Act on January 18th. And the other march that we've had so far in the past has been successful, but only on a local level. And that's why it's so important that this next one that's coming is going to be successful in raising a nationwide scale of awareness.
The details of that next action. Where? When is it going to be again?
It's going to be happening on February 3rd, and the time frame is temporarily set for 12 o'clock until 7 p.m., and we are looking at targeting rallies in front of the congressional offices, but there's some work and details that has to be worked out on that, too, because the complication that we're looking at doing that is that congressional offices are all over, and in order to do that, we have to delegate enough people to different offices while they're open and in session, so that we have people out there rallying to make this effort, you know, workable.
And of course, Oregon was the only state that had both senators actually opposing the NDAA.
Correct. Senator Merkley and Wyden were the two senators that voted against it, and they're still working against it with us. As far as we know, Washington, many, many other states voted for the NDAA. In fact, an overwhelming 86% of senators voted for.
Wasn't it 97 senators voted for?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I thought it was 97 senators that voted for
93.
It. 93, okay.
I'm on the website right now with the actual detail.
Oh, okay.
And, the official vote count, I believe, was 86 votes on yay and 13 votes on nay.
Oh, okay. Better than I thought, yet still horrible.
Right. It comes out to be an overwhelming 86% that voted for the NDAA in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And pertaining to the House, it's a 65% voting for the NDAA and then 31% voting against it.
And how did the Congress folk in this area fare compared to the senators? How'd the Congress folk vote?
You mean like the House and the it's complicated because when you look into it, the House consists of a lot more members. Obviously,
sure.
The vote on yay was like 283, and the vote on nay was 136. So,
but the representatives from Oregon,
from my understanding, has been more conservative than our senators.
Mm-hmm.
So they voted yes. Some of them voted yes on them, but we also have to consider that David Wu is out of office, and that also affects our votes.
Ah, yes.
Because there's a vacancy for his allegedly controversial act.
Right, right. All right, so let's go ahead, give that phone number out when people want to join us. We welcome you to hang out on the line for a moment. And Not entirely sure how the engineering pixie, I don't know if it's possible, if we can have everyone on the line for a moment and call for calls. But I've
got an extra line there.
Hang around for just a minute and let's see what we can do. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Or positivelyvolting@gmail.com if you can't get through on the phone.
Okay, so maybe we aren't actually going to be able to take the call and have Bao wait on the line. But I guess then before you leave us this morning, Bao, is there anything else you would like to get out to the listeners?
Yeah, for people who are interested in participating in any way or supporting in any way, we do have a contact list where you can email us. That's at peopleagainstndaa@gmail.com. No spaces, no hyphen or anything like that, just peopleagainstndaa@gmail.com. And I send out a mass list to everyone regarding future actions or meetings so that people know where to go and what they can do to contribute to the upcoming protests.
So peopleagainstndaa@gmail.com for to connect in and get more information about raising awareness around the NDAA. Of course, problems with the NDAA are longer than I could list in the next 35 minutes of this show. But let's say a substantial portion of concern would revolve around the fact that this opens up the possibility of detaining U.S. citizens anywhere for being basically declared terrorists or enemies of the state by their actions. You can sort of extend how that can be interpreted in times of, well, let's say, upheaval. And
some might call it disappears.
And basically disappears you into a military tribunal system where you don't actually have any constitutional guarantees of representation or indeed a trial. So it's a very, very serious and scary act. It was passed and signed on New Year's Eve. Thank you, Obama. So I think it's important to realize that this is now law. It's not one of those things that you know, we had talked for weeks about, stop this thing. Well, okay, it wasn't, and Obama did sign it, and so we have it. And now to raise awareness of the dire situation that puts anyone in who is actually acting on their conscience, it's imperative that we raise awareness and that we get this thing repealed.
I think the danger of the NDAA, as there's a popular argument that's been going around saying that the Obama administration has actually worked with Congress in removing the provisions that were dangerous pertaining to U.S. Citizens, and that when he wrote the letter on why he approved it and his discomfort with some of it, but having to still sign it, and saying that under his administration that he would not enforce it, so that the U.S. citizens would this law would pertain to U.S. citizens and that they were not protected. Well, the problem we're having with that is the language of the bill. Anyone involved in any belligerent act can be considered a terrorist, and there's no definition on what is a belligerent act or, what kind of conduct that they have to be engaged in or affiliated with in order to be considered a terrorist. And you can be detained. That's basically at the ambiguity of the Congress or the military officials who want to decide who is a terrorist, and they can hold you for whatever act or affiliation that you're with, in indefinite detention without due process or trial, which is unconstitutional because that's against our Sixth Amendment, our Seventh Amendment, Eighth Amendment, all of our amendments. So that's the danger of that. And the other thing that we're considering is with the popularity of the GOP and the race going on, we don't know who our next president is. We don't know who the next administration will be. And those, the people that will be in power will then be able to enforce this law a lot.
Or the one after that, or the one after that, or the one after that.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. That's the danger of the bill, and mostly because of the language of the bill. It's so ambiguous that it's open to so many different interpretations, and that there's no definitive guideline for what is a belligerent act and how they can enforce that. So that's the reality of the bill, and that's why a lot of people are still confused about it, because the bill is itself is over 900 plus pages long, and people don't read it. It's not meant for people to understand and read the bill and, you know, be able to summarize it. So if we can't trust our elected officials to, you know, tell us, you know, blatantly what it really means, then who are we able to trust?
Thank you very, very much, Bao, for joining us this morning and giving us that information and update.
No problem.
Bao, this is Arlo. Get us in the street on the next march, will you, buddy? Off the sidewalk, into the streets. Off the sidewalks, into the streets.
Off the sidewalk. I'm hoping and I'm doing my best to get us into the street. I really want to. My only problem with that is that if we don't have the support and we don't have the numbers...
You need numbers, yeah.
I risk that.
All right, this is Arlo. We'll work on it. Into the street, buddy.
We'll do our best.
Okay. So thanks very much, Bao, for joining us. And again, that action is Friday, February 3rd, starting at noon. Numbers do make a huge difference, don't they, Arlo?
They do. But what's the big deal with NDAA? I mean, really, I don't think...
Indefinite detention.
I don't think, if you're going to be so belligerent as to be ripping the flammable tags off of your own mattresses or whatnot, or stomping around downtown with a bullhorn, these are belligerent actions that...
And maybe disappearing into gulags is the appropriate civilized response.
If it's not supposed to happen, it'll all get worked out in the wash, right? You cannot indefinitely detain an idea whose time has come. So,
right on to that.
Note the sarcasm.
We can't even use the sarcasm font on the radio.
The font I just discovered.
I'm already saving the chants that we're going to need from the FEMA camps that translate well from the marches straight to the FEMA camp.
Okay.
Always good to plan ahead. Okay.
We have a listener joining us, I do believe.
We have Annie on the line.
Hey, I don't know if Val is still on the line. It sounds like...
We let Val go.
But the Rural Organizing Project did a really... good bang-up job of occupying Walden's offices for various reasons. I can't quite remember what they were. There's so much Occupy stuff on. So Val and Portland should be coordinating with the Rural Organizing Project, and because that's how they're going to get a lot of numbers at different Congress people's
and
offices.
And, of course, with all things Occupy, I have to say, if you see a need, it's a good thing to jump in and fill it.
But anyway, and then it was SOPA that was the three votes, Lynn.
Oh, was it?
I think. Yeah, I know. There's just too much acronym soup going on right now. It's hard to keep track. But that's the one where I read yesterday that Merkley backed off on voting for it because of the Internet blackout day.
And it's always good to see actions have tangible effect almost immediately,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah, because I don't believe SOPA was just in, it wasn't even going to be voted on yet. It was going even to committee, but...
Well, that's the three.
Because I don't think it's been brought up for a vote yet.
But anyway, get to work with Rural Organizing Project.
All right.
Thanks. My thing to say to Portland.
All right, thanks very much for your call. There are a number of other actions coming right up, and one of them is at noon today. I want to go ahead and make sure we know about that. Occupy the Courts is at noon today. Pioneer Square is the meeting place at 11:30, a rally at noon, and then a walk across the street to actually encircle the Pioneer Courthouse with people. And again, numbers means that we can do that or not. We need, 500 people to ring a block, right? Roughly speaking.
Plus, there will be the public debut of Tent Monster.
Always looking forward to that. Come on, kids. That's noon today. So Occupy the Courts. What's up with Occupy the Courts, you might ask? Occupy the Courts is an action that it draws attention to the second anniversary of the Citizens United decision.
Has that only been 2 years?
And it seems like forever.
We're getting very snarky.
Well, you know, Citizens United is 2 years, but the original problem that the courts, actually it was a clerk in an interpretation, I don't need to go into that. Anyway, that in our legal system, corporations are recognized as people due to the Supreme Court decision that happened oh so long ago. I don't have that year memorized anymore, but reaffirmed in Citizens United 2 years ago. And of course, corporations are not people. Of course, that is a legal fiction. Of course, that is absurd. And so, you know, money is not speech. Corporations are not people. Women are not incubators. Okay. So what we are looking at, again, is raising awareness. And today, the action is Occupy the Courts. This is a national day of action. Portland's action is at Pioneer Square at noon today. Again, raising attention and countering the idea, the silliness that corporations are people. Just next week, we have the one-year anniversary of Tahrir Square. And I've lost my ability to speak. Okay. But next week, on January 25th, we have the anniversary of the Tahrir Square uprising. And there is an action around that as well. You can find information about it on Facebook, actually, strangely enough, at the, what do we call that? The number sign. I am so not Twitter savvy. But
hashtag?
Yeah, that. It's a hash. I've heard people call it something else besides the number sign. That's so cool. Okay, I'm learning lingo. It's good. So the hashtag for Tahrir Square, well, let me actually, it's hashtag Tahrir Square, I do believe, but I'll actually get that in just one moment as my computer shifts about. But it's the one-year anniversary. It is the 25th, and the statement is, power to the people. Show your solidarity with all oppressed peoples worldwide. Gather in public squares and march to banks, police stations, prisons, malls, or any spot that represents worldwide corruption. No more war for profit. No more American corporate imperialism. Decolonize the mind. Occupy the earth with love and resistance to the police state. So that is basically international action being called for that first anniversary. And again, I will get the particulars of that in just one moment.
They're encouraging us to march to any portion of the city that has some sort of corrupt entity in it? That's the destination? Any corrupt entity?
No, I think that's the call out to the entire world. That said, in this city, we will be meeting at 5 o'clock at Pioneer Courthouse Square.
Noon, actually, I think.
I don't know.
Oh, this is Tahrir?
Yeah, this is Tahrir.
My bad.
Yeah. So this is, again, you know, there's so many actions.
There are.
Noon today, on the 25th, 5 o'clock, both at Pioneer Courthouse Square. And the march starts at 5 on the 25th for that anniversary. And then it gets marching. And we don't know where it ends.
We do know you couldn't throw a rock without hitting a corrupt institution in this or any city. So we won't have far to march wherever it is we're going.
That is so true. So let's go ahead and back to Nora. Good morning, Nora.
Good morning. I'm still here.
I'm so glad you're still here. So in listening to these different pieces of this movement, I want to hear a little bit more about your experience with Occupy DC. And also, just, I guess, your impression, as you went there, you've been an activist for many years, and I'm wanting to hear your impression of the atmosphere of the what you actually did for 5 weeks in the occupation you were with. How'd that go, and how are those issues of solidarity linking up awareness between the war on drugs, the corporations as people, the police state tactics of the NDAA. How do these things interrelate for you?
Well, right after I got there, of course, we got this holiday gift of the National Defense Authorization Act, the provisions in that for indeterminate or indefinite detention for American citizens at home or abroad. So we got real active in that. But before, when I got there on the 15th of November, I just started to volunteer in the community. I didn't necessarily go in and said, I'm Nora Callahan with the November Coalition, because, excuse me, it didn't feel appropriate because everybody was there with their own passion. So I just kind of jumped in, and I spent the first week working the kitchen, and then I spent the next 2 weeks after that, I became the intake person, being the person that would, when someone came into the camp, I would go over, because we had a at Freedom Plaza, we actually had rules and principles. So a person to stay in camp, they had to sign an agreement that they would follow the principles. And they were principles like not using violence, being intoxicated on the plaza, things like that. And so I did intake for 2 weeks, which was a lot more than just getting in, because you orientated them to the camp and made sure they had things that they needed. So I guess I worked the comfort tent and intake for 2 weeks. And then I did media work after that, mostly because someone left who was doing a lot of the videotaping and media, and so I took over doing that. So basically I did whatever I felt needed to be done rather than what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a wonderful experience to just be part of a community. And what I experienced was a lot of people had never had that experience before. And so it was very bonding. You know, you have all these people that are strangers to each other come together to live together.
Yeah, don't you think one of the true accomplishments of the Occupy movement has been getting people to relate and talk to each other and forming a community where it's such an isolated society at this point?
Correct. So that was absolutely wonderful to see that. And again, and it's true just like at other places, because we had food and housing for people, we had a lot of people who came out of need, not so much out of political aspiration. And some of those people politicized over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was so interesting just to be involved in a whole, it's kind of like if you could imagine if we did that everywhere instead of just in these actions. What if our communities were more like that, where anyone could have a say?
Right. And
that was a marvelous experience. To the idea that at General Assemblies, I mean, we would tackle things from big political actions down to housekeeping. You know, what, picking up the cigarette butts.
Right. Well, and it's, if you can't imagine something, it never can happen.
Exactly.
From what I can tell. And it's so important that that has been, we've rekindled.
I think. And I'm going back. I'll be back in D.C. before March 30th, because on March 30th in Washington, D.C., well, we're calling it, now D.C., but we're going to gather, even though Congress isn't back yet, we're going to gather in Washington, D.C. to have a social forum in preparation for their arrival back in D.C.
Excellent.
Mid-April.
Also,
Occupy Oakland has called for February 20th to be a day of action against the prison industrial complex.
So that's February 20th. That's a whole new action day that I haven't heard about yet. That's awesome.
So mark that on your calendars, and you can
get that on the calendar now.
If you Googled Occupy Oakland, February 20th, you would see that. And also at the end of February in Washington State, people are planning to gather in Olympia.
All right. Excellent.
So and it's just everywhere.
It is.
It's very exciting.
And, you know,
and the idea that so many activists are getting to know each other outside there. Because, you know, our own little groups tend to get kind of incest.
Right. This is what I find totally exciting. We're cross-pollinating. And to me, that is just thrilling. Because, as you say, we get so used to, and I am a firm believer that you follow your passion. You know, we cannot, no one person can do everything, and everything needs to get done, right? And so you follow that passion. Like, if your passion is saving the salmon, then go save those salmon. If your passion is ending the military-industrial complex, then end the military-industrial complex. But we need to very strongly link together, because all struggle is the same struggle. And certainly when we're talking about corporate rule, a fascist state allegedly elected rulers don't represent the voice of the people, but in fact represent the corporate interests and the interests of the ruling elite, who buy their seats, basically, for them through the system that recognizes money as free speech. So when we have that system, which is so utterly corrupt and broken, It is time that all people of conscience really unite and figure out how to make this new, how to make this right. We're not, by and large, and I'm not speaking for Occupy the world. I'm speaking as myself, somebody who's been active in the movement since I was, 14 or something, which we'll just say is over, it's like 31 years ago. When to me, there are all these different people who are working at little pieces of the same giant picture. When we can start talking to each other and understanding all struggle is the same struggle at that deeper level, and we unite, I'm not talking about little reforms, because little reforms don't really get us what we need. Little reforms, I don't know. I should ask probably Nora and Arlo as well. But I'm thinking for myself, little reforms, they don't really get us there. So we need a kind of a new system.
I think as we come together and become more informed about all the different ways that social injustice impacts everybody up and down a community, from the very beginning of policy to how that plays out in local communities, I think as we become more informed, we can start searching for actions that are not symptoms, not just, trying to put a Band-Aid on a wound that keeps happening, but, for instance, trying to make real effective change at the point where doing or not doing something can kind of shut down all those little symptoms. Like, I don't know, for instance, with the port, the shutdown of the port, if we can... The ship from EGT is coming. They already know we're coming after the ship and trying to stop it. So it's being sent with a military escort. I believe the late 80s, the postal strike was the last time that the U.S. military was called in to settle a labor dispute. And I think they lost that one. Labor won. So stopping... a campaign of this magnitude is not without precedent. And I think that, being able to draw attention to that ship, drawing attention to the cascading series of unfair labor practices that EGT and Bunge have had a hand in just this last year alone. They were fined, I think, $500,000 for clean air violations. They've had over millions and millions of dollars in lawsuits and fines for unfair labor practices. And, they need the grain to make it work. So if we can stop the ship from getting back home with the grain, then we've choked off or solved, brought a lot of awareness to an issue that needs a lot more attention, but also done something tangible and, not just symbolic in terms of an actual protest. So I think that's going to be real important for us, is finding effective and really damaging points that we can get our grubby little hands on, rather than not making much effectual change and just kind of symbolically stopping this, that, or the other.
Now, there are people coming from all over the country, really, but certainly all over the West Coast, to stop the grain ship, the EGT ship, coming into Longview. But notification of when exactly that happens, it's a little tricky. How are people staying in touch to figure out when exactly they need to head to Longview?
Well, we're kind of working that out now, and we're just kind of using word of mouth to get it done at the moment. And basically what we've heard is that the ship has gone, I heard, through the Panama Canal already, and has now turned and is heading up. And I guess what...
So you have, like, ship watch.
Yeah, we have a ship watch. We have spotters. And I guess what we're being told is to go...
Go to Google Earth.
Yeah, when we go...
Watch it.
When we go... Really? You can see it?
I don't know. I'm thinking that's a possibility. I'm also thinking of that old Saturday Night Live sketch when the ships were going to the Falklands.
And you can say... Okay, all right.
No, I don't go there.
I don't think that they actually have those screens.
I know.
But
okay. So... we're going to show up, and the longshoremen are the ones who have been dealing with this and who really kind of understand you know, where we're going to try and throttle this transaction down. And so we're just going to go up and lend support and answer this call from this community as occupiers and go and do what's needed on behalf of these union people who are in the fight of their lives against this. This would be the first grain elevator not staffed by the ILWU. So this is kind of a precedent
that is big.
Situation where if they can break labor on this one, then you know, the fear is that
That's
they'll start to tumble them. So
right. And again, as you mentioned earlier, the longshore workers in Longview have been engaged in the struggle with EGT for quite some time now. You can find all manner of press on interactions, on actions that the longshore workers have had themselves over the last couple years working out this issue with this mega conglomerate, EGT, that is such a... well, again, a great example, a perfect case in point of a mega corporation using money to break unions and to engage in you know, all manner, I would say, of unfair labor practices. Lynn, we have things coming up.
This is this is Positively Revolting right now. You're here with Ani and Lynn. We've got Arlo on the in studio here and Nora Callahan on the phone, but all sorts of things are going to be coming up this morning on KBOO at 9. There's Veterans Voice. The guest is Time Magazine investigative reporter Mark Thompson, who talks about his recent article, The Other 1%, on increasing disconnect and distance between the military and the rest of the U.S. population. At 10, hear Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features an update on the case of whistleblower Bradley Manning and Jeff Patterson, coverage of the situation in Iran, and the potential of war, and more on Occupy Wall Street. At 11, on the Radio Zine, host Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher welcomes journalist Thomas Frank, author of Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Times Swindle, and the Unlikely Comeback of the Right. And we just want to thank all you KBOO members for your support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one easily peasily by going to the KBOO.fm site and clicking on the tip jar. And we have a caller.
Let's talk to them.
Sean, what's up?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Hey, you know, I'm calling a show called Positively Revolting, so I want to be careful with my words. But, you know, at the risk of sounding like really self-indulgent, I'm severely depressed, and I just feel kind of paralyzed with a kind of... like a kind of bloodthirsty rage that I just don't know what to do with. You know, I'm getting treatment for it, but the reason I bring it up is I think a lot of people feel the same way. And one of the things the society seems to do is invalidate people's agony, invalidate people's suffering as a way of disappearing them. And would you guys address this notion of like that the left sometimes is guilty of this by putting, you know, such a positive spin on this or that little march or this or that little gathering? In a sense, we're kind of invalidating the annihilation that poor people are experiencing in the society. You know, we know that if we all show up and support the striking longshore workers, that our lot is not going to improve. You know, I mean, do you get where I'm going with this? That, you know, yes, of course, we should all support the union movement, but on another level, the literal disappearing, the annihilation, the invalidation of the poorest people in our society just goes on unabated. So would you guys address that a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love to. I think that, first of all, if you're wandering through the world and you're feeling depressed, morose, angst-ridden, and full of rage, that's probably a sign that your nervous system is functioning perfectly normally. Nothing is out of whack. You're having what a normal person would react to given the face of circumstances you just described. So don't write yourself off as not having the proper response to the environment that you're situated in, first of all. But I would say that the two issues, the destruction of poor people all over the world and the austerity measures being imposed on them from every angle, including the ones coming in this country, and a grain ship in Longview, Washington, 50 miles away, seemingly unrelated, but really not. And the reason why is that to pull yourself outside of depression or to start reengaging or to make connections with people who are of like mind and suffering the same reactions to financial difficulty, you got to find these people. And one of the best things about Occupy has been coming out from under a rock where I know personally, I felt for years I was screaming about this stuff just into the face of a gale force wind with nobody around to hear, people looking at me going, how can he talk bad about George Bush? This guy, before Bush became like a train wreck that everybody made fun of as a comic, I was right off the bat with this guy, and people were like, oh, I don't know why I could say that. So you have to find people who you have affinity with, and then once you start accomplishing something and getting things done on behalf of poor people, you will start to feel internally better because of the work that you're doing on behalf of all poor people. So it all kind of ties in together, I think.
Thank you, Arlo.
Indeed.
That was a nice answer to that question.
We have just a couple minutes.
I relate.
Yeah, totally.
It sounded that way. Yeah.
We have just a couple minutes left. I want to make sure that folks know about another couple of things coming right up. So we mentioned today's Occupy the Courts at noon at Pioneer Square.
Green tent.
In Portland. And then we also have January 25th, a day of solidarity with Tahrir Square on the first anniversary of their uprising, 5 o'clock meeting at Pioneer Square in Portland. And then the action against the NDAA on February 3rd, meeting at noon. And also something we actually haven't talked about at all, but we will before it happens, and that's F-29. It's a day of action, national day of action, called by Portland to shut down the corporations. That's February 29th. Direct action should be very, very exciting.
I love those direct actions. Also, we are having a mayoral race here in Portland, and working families in Occupy Portland are holding a forum at Portland State with candidates of the mayoral Portland and Portland City Council. 1 p.m., this is Saturday, January 28th, 1 p.m. forum pre-meeting open to public, 2 p.m. candidates forum open to public. That is at Portland State University. Working families and Occupy Portland.
And Nora, we heard that you're planning on going back to D.C. imminently. Do you have any last words for our listeners as we wrap up our program today?
Well, I think that people should be encouraged that there's so much movement, because change doesn't happen without the people moving like this. If you look historically, this is how it happens. And you had brought up incrementalism versus big change. And big change is long-lasting. Incrementalism kind of goes back and forth too much. It is possible to have what's called an evolution or social change, punctuated equilibrium.
Yes, yes.
When it happens big, and it has in the past, and so I think people need to be really encouraged to just get involved, and you'll see it happen. If we aren't involved in this way and in the streets and constantly there to show that people need to rule, not corporations, it won't happen. But enough people are awakened, I think, that, you know, we're on the road to some punctuated equilibrium, great and long-lasting change.
As an anthropology major, when I was back in school, I got to say, go punk ek. Yeah.
Yes, punk ek. Well,
also, if you want to learn more about and help get involved with the Longview Action, you can come to the Union Hall on 64th and Foster at 6 p.m. on Saturday. This Saturday, we're having another organizing meeting. Again, that's 64th and Foster, Union Hall, right on the corner there. Can't miss it. 6 p.m. Saturday.
And this about wraps it up for us. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Will that be membership drive, I believe?
It will, in fact.
So thank you all so much.
Occupy.
And remember, occupy and be. Stay positively revolting.
It's a way of life.
Someone's beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. There was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the Lord. long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo, the way we look to a south, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation dying in the corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. Don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. They swept across the desert, they curled into the circle of earth. In the dead sand, falling on the children, the mothers and the fathers, in the automatic earth. These are the days of miracle and wonder.